And good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. Welcome into the show. David's in the control booth, and Grover is, so we took him to the pet sitter yesterday, got him back after, because we went away for the weekend.
He went on a train ride. So, has anybody else ridden a train? I would have to say I've done the train, I've done planes, I've done automobiles, planes, trains, automobiles, and I will have to admit my favorite way to travel so far, thus far, has been the train. So the train is very relaxing, and the like. So I rode from California to Indiana and went through various different places, and they had like a, what do you call those, window cars. So I got to sit and they would actually talk about the history of the land when we were going through New Mexico and all that stuff. So it was kind of like getting a history lesson as I went through different places. And I thought that was really cool. So are you back, sir?
Yeah. Do I keep popping off here? What the heck's happening?
Yeah.
Here?
Your internet keeps going down. I can see you go. You just go completely red. And no, we don't have Comcast. I have Comcast, but Clayton does not. I don't know what you have over there.
Yeah, no, I don't. But I have fiber, so I don't know what's happening today. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
I apologize. Grover apologizes as well. But anyway, I don't know what your last thing you heard, but I said, you know, we were away this weekend, and Grover was away at the pet sitter. Got to get him back and get him washed after he was all dusty and covered in sap, because he plays out in this, like, farmer, you know, field and with all these dogs. And he comes back, he's always got, like, a patch of sap all over him. So he's like, and then we scrub him up. And like the bathtub is just like filled with dirt, you know, like, and he's just like, and he's all clean. And then he's like, and then he sleeps for all night because he was playing nonstop with these dogs. So it's like a doggy day camp. He has a blast. All right. So let's get to it today. Let's talk about our lead story, which is the stimulus plan. There have been some circulations happening lately about there have been three different rounds of stimulus payments, as you know, since the start of COVID-19 pandemic. And however, neither the White House nor Congress has approved a fourth round of stimulus yet, a direct relief as of right now. And it's uncertain if they actually will in the future. But this has not kept the rumors from flying about right now on the internet. So I wanted to do this story because there's a lot of talk about, hey, on the 19th, you're going to get a new stimulus check and it's going to be dispersed by the federal government. Specifically, a new check of up to $7,000. It's going to happen on August 19th. And I've seen the rumors, and I've seen YouTubes, maybe it's like President Trump is going to be reinstated, right? Like, he's going to, like, that's the day. He's coming back, like this $7,000 stimulus check. Now, there is some truth to upcoming stimulus, and we'll get to Nancy Pelosi's angle on this in just a few moments, and maybe grounds for $2,000 stimulus checks. That is on the table, certainly as this Delta variant has exploded. But Google's recent daily reports of trending terms has shown big spikes in internet searches for phrases such as $7,000 stimulus checks August 19th. Where did this come from? Well, thanks to the media, you can thank a false report, not surprisingly.
From Mike Lindell. Sun.
No, not from the MyPillow guy. Not from the MyPillow guy.
Oh.
But from the Sun. Yeah, Sun newspaper. A false report in the U.S. Sun claiming that a new payment will arrive in bank accounts on October 19th from the Internal Revenue Service, up to $7,000. Okay. The rumors on the internet are not true, folks. You are not getting a fourth stimulus check for $7,000 on August 19th. The Biden administration has not passed any legislation on this question, unfortunately. Has not passed any direct legislation regarding a fourth stimulus check. And the majority of Congress has seemed to kind of steer clear of this fourth stimulus package as well for now. But over the weekend, we're starting to hear rumblings of Democrats wanting to push for additional stimulus checks. Why? Because of possibility of additional lockdowns. Delta variant. And I've seen some people saying, hey, you know, more lockdowns for Democrats means more stimulus. And it allows them to kind of push forward on their packages, push forward on additional incentives for big business, et cetera. And I will say what Andrew Yang said a while ago, which is, I'm fine if we want to have a pork project for a bridge that gets bundled in with a package that actually helps you, because that's the only way it seems to work in Washington, that if we can actually get something that actually, you know, some sort of an infrastructure thing that actually fixes broadband, fixes a bridge, but also includes $2,000 stimulus checks in it? Great. Sign me up.
You know, it would be great if we had some kind of like representation of us in there to where we could negotiate and say, look, we'll give you 3 items of pork if you give us 6 items of like right. of our money. Like right. we're negotiating our own money, but we don't have anybody there to do that. So it's pretty right. much they can decide. And then we just sit here and just in the balance, it's like, okay, hopefully they give us a little bit of our money. Hopefully they give us a little bit back of our money. Oh, dang it. They gave it all to their buddies again. Doggone it.
Yeah, because you have to remember the ROI is limited. But now Democrats see that the ROI is actually pretty strong, right? When we know that actually getting stimulus checks actually helps in elections. Remember what happened with Donald Trump in Florida? There were a number of Americans who said because they got a check that said Donald Trump on it, they voted for Donald Trump. Well, yes, Biden, it actually worked.
Biden only won because he was saying $2,000 checks would go out the following week. That's why he won the election.
Well, in Georgia specifically, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, yeah. And that's why they won the special election in Georgia.
And that's why they have control of the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm. With a razor thin margin. So it turns out, yes, that progressive populism actually works, but it doesn't work if, you know, you just pay lip service to it, but you would actually follow through on it. So stimulus update, no, you're not getting a fourth stimulus check for $7,000 on August 19th, unfortunately.
And just but so there, a couple of people yeah. asking, ROI is return on investment, Belinda.
Yeah, return on investment, ROI. So when a member of Congress thinks to themselves, what's the return on investment for me to funnel billions of dollars to Raytheon, Boeing in defense contracts and make sure that these large corporations build bridges and get government grants to do so, right? What's the return on that investment for them? Millions in reelection money, right? That's the ROI for them. But when they want to just funnel a stimulus check to you, what is the return on that investment? Minimal, because it's going to be seen as, you know, coming from President Biden rather than like the congressman who may or may not have voted for it. But it's actually funny to see this last round of stimulus that happened, because so many Republicans who voted against it, zero of them voted for it, but they all then went out and started campaigning on it, didn't they? It was hilarious. So you saw Mitch McConnell talking about it. We played you the sound here on the show where he was in Kentucky. He's like, None of my colleagues voted for it. No, I didn't vote for it, but you got the money, and it's helping. It's
like, okay. You know why they do that? Because they know what we want. We tell them what we want. They know exactly what we're asking for. They just choose not to give it to us. So it's like if they want to run on something, they know exactly what to run on. They know exactly right. what to say. They know exactly what to do in order to get us to back them, and then they just don't follow through once they get in office.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating, and we know the amount of trouble that we're dealing with right now in the United States. I mean, the cost of everything, of course, has gone up. We know that the cost of just about everything, from milk to sugar to gas to home prices to, you know, I mean, cheese, so everything, right? At the grocery store.
I talked to a company that's going to do the back. So there's a couple places in the back fence in my yard where pizza can get under, and so I had guys come out and give me a quote. And the guy said that he has to use 2x6s in order to put them down in the ground. And he was saying it's going to be expensive. He said, because 2x4s used to be about $1.97 a piece, where they're like $7 or $8 right now. He said, so it could be up to like $20 to $23 or so per 2x6.
That's unbelievable. And I should mention once again that pizza is your dog.
Yes.
Not a slice of pizza that keeps coming into your yard.
Yeah, there's not pizza crawling under
my
fence.
But I just find that hilarious. So like if someone's just tuning in for the first time and they're like, this guy has pizza that keeps showing up in his bag, keeps trying to get through his fence. Like someone's waking up and they're like half groggy. They're like, man, I haven't had my coffee yet. Did this guy with the beard just say he has pizza that keeps getting out of his yard? Like what the hell's happening? No, you have not lost your mind. That's David's name of his dog.
Yes, my Chihuahua.
And you can hear Grover, my 1-year-old mini pincher, in the background. He just was barking and looking at something, then popping back down. It's amazing how quickly he can go from like barking to I want to be able to do that. So yeah, so right now, no, I mean, if you're just tuning in and you're wondering, where is this fourth stimulus check, you know, for $7,000 on August 19th that I've been hearing people talk about on YouTube, et cetera, and the UK newspapers are you know, the US version of the UK newspapers are talking about it and all of this garbage. No, it's not happening. Like, here it is, fourth stimulus check update, new payment to arrive by August 19th. I mean, this is literally in a newspaper. It's not true. It's not true. And they say $7,000 is going to be delivered in there. No, it's not true. I'm sorry. It's unbelievable how the mainstream media lies to you. But there is movement on the Nancy Pelosi front and a petition front. So I'm going to get to, I want to talk about the petition front first, which is this $2,000 for every American. So I've been excited about this. I've added my name to this petition. You all should as well. If you go to change.org and you do a search for this, $2,000 a month to every American, I'll add it to the show description as well. It's the money for the people. They are trying to get to 3 million signatures. And now members of Congress are have been actually meeting with the head of this restaurant who started this petition. And so Stephanie and her husband, restaurant owners, they started this petition. My name is Stephanie. I'm one of the millions of Americans who fear for my financial future because of this coronavirus crisis. With businesses and schools closing across the country and to control the spread of the virus, many people have lost their jobs. Others are being forced to stay home. This is catastrophic for working families like mine. I'm calling on Congress to support families with a $2,000 payment for adults, a $1,000 payment for kids immediately, and continuing regular checks for the duration of this crisis. My husband and I own a restaurant in Denver, and these past 2 weeks have been a blur. Our restaurant community is wrestling with seeing everything we have all worked so hard for irrevocably changed. So like our team, my family has lost all of our income for our restaurant. Business owners and the self-employed can't claim unemployment. This is the story of America right now. And yes, wages being, unemployment being removed. And these businesses, which were not kept in business, which were not helped really at all by the federal government, when other countries around the world were propping up and helping these small businesses, stay closed, we will support you. Instead of spending billions on bombs, we will actually pay you to stay in business, but not be open. Keep your doors closed.
So it's up to about 200,000 small businesses that have gone out of business since the beginning of the pandemic. So the big corporations that, you know, didn't need the help could have gotten through this just fine, got all the help. But the mom and pops, the ones that, you know, are the ones where we spend our money and our time, they just let them collapse. Over 200,000 small businesses. So that, again, if you don't look at it this way, that is more money going to the bigger corporations because we just killed 200,000 of their competitors over a pandemic. So now they got less competition, which means they're going to make more money. So and they didn't give them a dime of help. We had to jump through all these hoops to get any kind of help.
Unbelievable. Like Arlene says, my husband's friend lost his restaurant business because he couldn't find workers. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable right now what's happening. And the government couldn't help these people. The government, I mean, we have Australia, we have New Zealand, we have Norway, we have Finland, we have UK, we have France, we had Italy, we had Canada, all being able to help these businesses.
Well, that's because the bigger businesses needed it. Like we during the CARES Act, you know, we transferred $5 trillion to the biggest corporations because, I mean, we can't let them fall apart. We can't let Bears and Stern, we can't let any of them file bankruptcy because of their, you know, the way that they do business. We had to let the people collapse. The people need the fall. Like the people don't need money. The people are fine. We don't need houses. We don't need food. We're fine. These big businesses, if without them, where would we be? If the stock market's down, you know, where are we?
Oh, exactly. Because it's all, as Ian Ewing says, what did you say? Corporate communism? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Really sad. And Jonathan Stewart says it's way worse than the Great Depression. I mean, and you look at the income inequality. We'll get to the gold standard here in the future of our, you know, the day the dollar died coming up a little bit later in the show. But it is. It really is. I mean, if you look at the income inequality, the mass incarceration rate across the United States, and the wealthy just doing great. I mean, all you need to do is look at this morning and, you know, CNBC and others saying, oh, the stock market taking off. Dow closes. S&P closed on Friday at record highs. Wall Street's doing fantastic. And they're mostly concerned about how long the Fed is going to continue to provide billions of dollars to these big businesses, these Wall Street firms, at 0% interest rate. So the government can keep lending money at 0% interest to Wall Street. Wall Street really needs this money right now. They are really hurting.
Can't give that same low interest loan, zero interest loan, to the businesses that are actually like us, you know, like the lawn care guys, the whatever, all these small businesses, these small restaurants and everything that are out here just clinging to life, and you can't give them a dollar. Even like a 1 or 2% loan, something like that, nothing.
Right, Bruce says, couldn't or wouldn't? Great point.
Yeah,
wouldn't. Oh, absolutely could. Right, Bruce? We know they could. They could absolutely funnel this money. I mean, we just spent 20 years in Afghanistan and spent $2 trillion propping up another country that should never have been propped up to begin with. It wasn't even a country, and we decided to try to make it one. Didn't we learn anything from what happened in Africa hundreds of years ago? Like, you just want to take an entire continent and divide it up with lines and that make no sense, that cross purposes with climate? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Let's just anyway, that we'll get to Afghanistan a little bit later in the show. But Nancy Pelosi is moving forward on advancing the infrastructure and budget framework simultaneously. So this is actually quite a shift this morning. This is a pretty big shift over the weekend, I will say, and I didn't know we would see this happen. But moderate Democrats demanded quicker votes. They said, those nine moderate Democrats that basically said, look, we're not going to vote for this unless we get a vote on this bipartisan infrastructure bill at the same time as the budget. So House Speaker Pelosi on Sunday asked a top committee to start look at moving forward on the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill along with $3.5 trillion budget framework in an effort to balance the demands of her party's ideological factions. The request came after nine centrist House members said Thursday they will not consider voting for a budget resolution until the House approves the infrastructure bill.
All right. Isn't that funny? That anybody who's like, you know, for the people, they're like a different faction of the, like, we got to cater to these people now, I guess.
Yeah, nine people. And by the way, they said they sent the letter out. The nine of them said, well, we don't think this goes far enough. While we appreciate the forward procedural movement on the bipartisan infrastructure agreement, our view remains consistent. We should vote first on the infrastructure framework without delay and then move to immediate consideration of the budget resolution. Okay. They're planning to pass that budget under a process known as reconciliation, and they don't need the 60 votes. They need 50, and they cannot have anybody defecting on this. They can't. I mean, even if three of them jump ship, they're not going to be able to get this legislation through. And then if you have nine, that's done. This thing is done.
They're going to have to ignore the parliamentarian again, though, or you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like, is that going to be the scapegoat now?
Well, fortunately, like all of these things, I mean, I guess the $15 an hour minimum wage was the issue before, but that's not a part of this. So they can pass. There's nothing in this that stands out like a sore thumb that I've read. So this should be able to pass with the budget reconciliation process. And there should be no parliamentarian issue this time around. But it was just the $15 an hour minimum wage that I guess they couldn't do anything with the Senate parliamentarian. This budget package will offer family paid leave, federal paid benefit leave, universal pre-kindergarten, 2 free years of community college, not four, because, you know, America, right? And expanded Medicare to cover hearing, dental, and vision care, among other provisions. They also plan to allow Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices, have a bunch of climate proposals, energy tax incentives, and the push to the U.S. to receive 80% of its electricity from clean sources by 2030.
And to offer Medicare for everybody, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's too far. That's parliamentarian territory.
No, just expanded Medicare. So you'll be able to cover hearing loss, dental, and vision care. But not full. So, no. Still, you know, because America, like, we can't help the people. We can help big businesses, so we can't go that far. So don't go crazy. And, you know, we can't offer actual free college. We can give you 2 free years of community college. Just 2 free years. Take it and leave it, you Americans. Shut up. We're the richest country in the world.
Well, that's the thing. They know this stuff. It's like, we're going to give you 2 years of college. We'll take care of 50% of the hungry kids. you know, of kids in poverty. Like, we'll just give you enough to shut you up and make you think that we've done something for you so that, you know, you just shut up and let us keep passing our stuff and giving our money to our buddies. You guys are just getting in the way. You're really pissing us off. Just shut up, take what we give you, and go about your life.
Right. And, you know, we'll send out our propaganda machine on television to tell you how we can't keep borrowing from our children's future. We can't keep spending this kind of money. We can't just have these entitlement programs. So we'll send out our minions onto Fox News and MSNBC and other places, and we'll tell you why this is good enough. You know, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. Just take it and shove it. And we cannot continue to borrow from our children's future, but we can continue to bomb other countries. So that's patriotism, right? So
that's basically, you know, what they're saying. Would you stupid people shut up? We've got 9 wars to fight over here, okay? While we're over here fighting these 9 wars and spending all this money, you're wanting food and housing and Medicare for all? Shut up.
Shut up. And I bet you can't even name these 9 wars that we're in right now. Can you? No, you can't. Of course you can't.
Because they don't. There's nothing on the media anymore. They don't. They do not show us anything. Like I don't even know how many countries we're in. We're probably in Barbados or something. Who knows? We're building bases right now in Jamaica.
Yeah, I can't even name all the places. I mean, you know, I can't. You really can't. I mean, you can think Yemen, Somalia. I mean, you know, Afghanistan. No, we're not in Afghanistan anymore, right? But I guess we're back in Afghanistan because we're about to send 6,000 troops back there. So that's even more than before. So, okay, we had 2,000, which was contentious, and now we're going to send 6,000. Okay, so now
we had to leave to go get refortified and come back with more.
Kristen says, yeah, damn, we're spoiled with our eating and our need for shelter. Yeah, Kristen, you don't need to eat, and you don't need a house. Come on. I mean,
nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Jenny. You don't need a house. So we'll see. But now the Democrats say they're not happy with this. It's a move forward. Great. We'll see if we actually move forward on this stimulus plan with Nancy Pelosi putting these things together at the same time. So we'll have more on that as we continue to watch what happens on the stimulus front and additional monies perhaps coming to the American people, whether in the form of pre-K money or child tax credits or actual stimulus checks. So again, you know, I'll have a link to that stimulus petition in our show notes. So go there and sign that if you will.
I'm going to go sign that. But you know what would be crazy is if all of us would unite for 1 year and not pay our taxes, they would listen. They would be like, oh my gosh, we can't pay the war budget this year. We better start listening. They're holding their money. So what do you guys need? What do you need? We can't wax our palms anymore. All we're getting is lobby money, and we need your taxes to give to the lobbyists and stuff. So what do you guys need? That's all it would take. 1 year.
I like to think you're right on that. But didn't we just have that? That's exactly what we just went through during the pandemic. They like canceled taxes they put it on a huge delay, right? You don't have to pay your taxes. And so we saw the federal government, right, for the first time in whatever, I don't know, 20, 30 years, took in less money than it was putting out, right? But that didn't stop them. In fact, they continued, and they continued to borrow money. I mean,
doing. It wasn't a protest, because you got to look, like, there were a lot of taxes they still got. True. And they weren't putting out anything for us. So it's like, you know, we didn't have money to put in because we weren't making money during that. So I think, like, if it was a where we came together and they got none of our taxes, that would be completely different than them deciding who didn't pay, because a lot of people still paid.
Yeah. Thank you for the super chat. Ashrutu says, these politicians argue over debt as if we don't know how to run a deficit. If we're going to continue spending, at least take care of the people. Yeah. Hallelujah. Yeah. I'd be thrilled to not pay taxes like Jeff Bezos, you know, but every year I diligently send them a check and make sure that they get their tax money, and it's gone and spent in like a fraction of a second. You know, they spend it in a fraction of a second on that national debt clock. They just spend it immediately, and it goes right to a military budget, you know? So,
right, to keeping us safe by being terrorists.
Yeah. We're going to look at some amazing video from Laura Ingraham in just a moment, and a whole debate on how we should increase wages in the United States. You do not want to miss that. We're also going to take a look at when the day that the dollar died, coming up on the show. It's going to be an interesting look at that. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Blue Chew. They support our show, and you should support them because they are a longtime sponsor of Morning Invest. If you go to bluechew.com and use that coupon code INVEST, you're going to save some money. Plus, you're going to get a free, you're going to get to be able to try it for free when you use our promo code INVEST at checkout. And you're just going to pay $5 shipping. But anyway, Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, and they send them in these little packets. You can pick the size of the packets that you want. And again, so if you could benefit from extra confidence in the bedroom, Blue Chew can help. We've got a special deal for our listeners right now. Try Blue Chew for free when you use our promo code INVEST at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code INVEST to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring our show. Thank you, Blue Chew.
I feel like while you read that whole segment, I should be in the background going,
oh, yeah. Turn it on. Buy that, Blue Chew.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Turn small it packets. On.
Oh, yeah.
Small packets just delivered discreetly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Our thanks to Blue Chew, and I love their sense of humor, and I love that they support independent journalism. You know, I don't see them advertising on like CNN and those kinds of places. They're advertising here to support our show, and I much thanks to them for supporting the truth and covering these stories that they're not going to cover anywhere else. All right, let's talk about this story. I was astonished. Maybe I wasn't astonished. To answer this question in the country, like we've got a labor shortage, right, in our country. What do we do with this labor shortage? Well, one of you wrote me a message on one of our YouTube videos and said, you know, Clayton, we don't have a labor shortage. We have a wage shortage, which I said, that's exactly what I've been saying here on this show for more than a year. Have I not? Anyone back me up on this? Have I not been saying this? We've been having a wage shortage. That's the problem. It's not a labor shortage. But not everyone agrees. Not everyone agrees. On Thursday night, Fox News' Laura Ingraham invited bar rescue host John Taffer on to discuss the so-called labor shortage that is somehow only affecting jobs that do not pay very well. Isn't that amazing how the jobs that don't pay well, there's just a shortage of those. We just can't find workers for those in poor working conditions. You mean, wait a minute, if I make $2.18 an hour, I'm just having trouble finding a person for that job? So, you know, and they also involved a huge amount of risk during the pandemic, right? Grocery store employees who were working on the front lines with no health benefits or anything, and they were there helping people get food every day. These are like, you know, 18-year-old kids. Terrible pay. So what is the problem? Well, it's certainly not that servers only make $2.13 an hour before tips, or that it's hard to get a lot of tips in a climate where people are still actually hesitant to go out to a restaurant. And we did the story last week about how people just aren't even tipping that much anymore, right? Because they're like, well, you know, I overpaid you in takeout food at the restaurant back a while ago, but now that I'm actually sitting down here in the restaurant, this lowly waitress and waiter doesn't need to make tips anymore, so I'm just going to not tip you. People are doing that. So this is Ingram's target audience, right? Is we can't like tell her our target audience like to go out and get vaccinated or anything like that. No. And it's also not that most schools haven't yet gone back full time. And also people can't afford childcare and can't afford to get childcare. No, no, no. It's that people who should be wanting us to, the people who should be waiting on us are basically sitting at home right now collecting unemployment checks for far more than they would make otherwise. This is her argument, because they have no work ethic. And they are lazy. They are totally lazy. And you know what? They're like dogs. Instead, we should just make them go hungry. This is her plan. Instead of actually paying them livable wages, why not just let them go hungry? Here's Laura Ingraham.
I'm not an economic professor. If you get $800 a week unemployment benefits, and you live with a partner who also is getting $800 a week unemployment benefits, $1,600 a week, Laura, $83,000 a year for that household in unemployment benefits. The median income in America is only $63,000. We're incentivizing people to stay home.
Hold on. First of all, do what he's doing. First of all,
do you think maybe that's because nobody's incentivizing them to go to freaking work?
Exactly. On top of it, he's just wrong in his numbers. I mean, let me just point this out for a second, right? I mean, to a note, he makes a $63,000 or about that median income argument with two working people. The median income for one person is $35,000. Okay. Which is notably is at least 8,000 less than the living wage literally anywhere in the entire United States. Okay. So, okay, that argument's out the window. And it's $10,000 less than literally every state that is not Kentucky, by the way. Sorry, I had to interrupt you.
What if we gave that additional unemployment benefits to employers to incentivize people to go to work?
Well, what if we just cut off the unemployment? I mean, hunger is a pretty powerful thing. I don't mean physical hunger, because people who truly are in need help. I'm talking about people who can work but refuse to work. But the government is literally putting anvils in many ways on people's shoulders, either through the mandates, regulations, and now through free money, which obviously we're all going to, the piper eventually has to be paid. John, I want to ask you, though, about this idea of work-life balance. Because, look, no one wants to miss their kids growing up. No one wants to, you stay in the office your whole life, you never see your family. So that's really important. However, have we taken that a step too far when you think of, well, a lot of the millennials talking about, well, I need time for self-care. I don't know why I'm harping on that tonight, but the whole self-care movement is a little, I mean, my mother is not with us anymore, but she worked by the time she was 12 during the Depression. If she heard the self-care thing, I think her head would explode.
While she sits in a chair making $20 million a year.
Military who trains military dogs, Laura, and they only feed a military dog at night because a hungry dog is an obedient dog. Well, if we're not causing people to be hungry to work,
what a parallel.
We're providing them with all the meals they need sitting at home. I'm completely with you, Laura. These benefits make absolutely no sense to us. And on top of the impact of not getting employees and not being able to run our businesses, in my industry, we have meat prices are up 10%, chicken prices are up 15%.
Now, inflation is killing is going to kill business. I mean, that's the next shoe to drop. The Democrats.
Yeah. Meat prices are up. I can't believe it. I just can't, I can't get the steaks that I used to, 10%. I up 10%, and I make $40% margins on every steak I sell here, but I only pay my workers $2.16 an hour. But, hey, I want to treat them like dogs. Yes, you heard that right. This guy, I'm comparing these people to dogs. They must be taught to be obedient through being treated cruelly like a dog.
We're going to listen to people like her that make $20 million. I don't know what she makes, but I guarantee her salary is in the double-digit millions. And she's going to talk to us like she understands where people are at.
Yeah.
You're not incentivizing people to go to work, why would you? Why would I go work for $2.13 an hour and struggle and fight for survival when I am getting a benefit that keeps me there's not a lot of people who do that, but even the people who do, I get it.
Nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Janine. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, Laura Ingraham, what if we just cut the unemployment off? Hunger is a pretty powerful thing. Bar rescue guy. Yeah, they only feed the military dog at night because a hungry dog is an obedient dog. Well, if we're not causing people to be hungry to work.
I got an idea, Clayton. We need to start a petition. I got a great idea. We need to cut off the salaries of the Senate and Congress and not give them anything and feed them once a day. All right.
Right.
And make them work for us. And like, because we can make them obedient to us if we take away their money and feed them once a day. So we can, let's take away their health care. Let's take away all their benefits. Let's take their furniture budget. They don't need that. And let's just pay them enough that they can eat once a day. And then I bet you they will become the obedient dogs. What?
Well, no, I agree with you in part, but no, I think they need that $30,000 a year furniture budget. Like, I'm going to stick with that. I think they absolutely need a good couch. And and they need good drapes and really nice like French wallpaper in their offices at the Capitol. $30,000 a year is not too much for a furniture budget for Congress.
Okay, I can concede that. I will allow that, the $30,000 furniture budget, as long as it doesn't go to food, it only goes to furniture, and we give them enough for one day. As a matter of fact, let's just have HelloFresh send them enough food that they can eat once a day so that you know, it's helping a company or whatever, so that they can get behind that. And
I like that.
Yeah. And then that way they will work for us and we will decide, you know, what they get, how to ration their food or whatever. And let's see how much they work for us. Those, you know, it's so messed up how lazy they are getting their paychecks from us every month. And, you know, $15,000 a month we give them. It's just crazy. Like,
Tina Hines says, no, Clayton, no furniture budget. No, I think I'd love to give them a furniture budget and no food, so they'd have to chew on upholstery. Like, they'd have, like, that's the only thing they could eat, is they'd have to chew on a chair.
Maybe that's, we could just cut it in half so they can't at least, like, they at least have to buy cheap furniture.
Right. Or they could sit on one half of it because it'll fall over.
Yeah. I know what we do. On top of that, let's make it so it has to be IKEA furniture, and they have to assemble it live on video for us to watch.
They have to put it together.
Yeah.
They have to put together particle board, yeah, with those little nuggets that have to turn with the little screw thing. It pops into the thing, and you know what I'm talking about.
And we only give them half the instructions.
Nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Janine. Exactly what I've been saying for a long time. You know, unemployment, here's the thing. What people don't want to talk about in these statistics is that unemployment is going way down. We hit a new pandemic era low last month. We went from 4 million long-term unemployed down to 3.4 million in 1 month, which is a massive drop. Many of these businesses that are still experiencing a labor shortage are businesses that simply don't want to pay people enough to work at them. Are they gleefully comparing American citizens to dogs? I mean, that's literally what's being said here. And are they saying that this would be better, that they'd be starving? Starving to be better off starving as a struggling family? Like, just cut it off. Cut off the food. Hunger is a powerful motivator. My mom worked during the Great Depression. She was 12. I got news for you, Laura. Child labor, we have child labor laws in this country on purpose. So what are you encouraging, like, now that these families can't put food on their table? You know, send out your 12-year-olds. Because we're, you know, send out your entitled 12-year-olds, tell them to get off the Xbox and go, go shine shoes in the alleyway or go sell newspapers. Extra, read all about it.
And think about the justified crime. If you had people that couldn't feed their family, they're going to steal food. They're going to you will have to resort to some sort of crime, because who's going to let their family die of starvation? I wouldn't. They think so backwards.
Military dogs were. And they only feed a military dog at night because a hungry dog is an obedient dog.
Gosh. Turn around and drink like 3/4 of that alcohol behind you and shut up.
How am I going to pay for all this alcohol back here? I can't do it, Laura. Like, I got these people. I got to pay, like, I only pay them $2 an hour, but now you want me to pay them $4 an hour? How am I going to do that, Laura? How can I do that? How am I going to buy this special bourbon back here for my rich guys who come down from Wall Street half the time? How am I going to do that? You're a rich dog. Well, I can't even find a fun little ice cream.
I'm a millennial, Brandon says, and I won't apologize for wanting vacation days or sick time. I won't apologize for refusing to perpetuate the idea that you're only valuable on Earth if you've worked yourself into illness and death. I get one life, and I'm not living it for Laura Ingraham's mother. Well said, Brandon.
Heck yeah.
You know, good point. Why is it that rich people think the only way to motivate people in need is to take money away, while the only way to motivate rich people is to give them more money? Which I love is what this moron said at the beginning, right? Which is, why don't we give the businesses the money? That's what we should be doing instead of giving these unemployment benefits out to people, right? That's where we should be giving the money. Incentivize the businesses.
$100 a week unemployment benefits. And you live with a partner who also is getting $800 a week unemployment benefits. $1,600 a week, Laura. $83,000 a year for that household in unemployment benefits. The median income in America is only $63,000. We're incentivizing people to stay home. What if we gave that additional unemployment benefits to employers to incentivize people to go to work?
I'm a genius.
And you know, they sit there and they brag like, my mother worked from the time she was 12 years old till the day she died on her deathbed. She was a real hard worker, and she'd be laughing at this. Like, what? Like, people should be allowed to enjoy their lives. We should not be slaves to labor our entire life. Like, if you look at other countries like Italy and stuff, these people get a chance to live their life and be happy. They get Medicare. They don't have all the stress that we have. They get vacations. Like, I can't remember how long it is, but it's like months of vacation included in their employment. We get none of that. We get no quality of life, no way to enjoy our lives. We're expected to work cradle to grave for nothing.
You're supposed to work for nothing, David. What do you think you're entitled to? You know, you can wear these fancy T-shirts that have hilarious sayings on them and not have to pay the piper. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, how am I going to pay for these steaks? I got all these steaks and this alcohol here. I got to, you know, who am I going to? You think I'm going to be serving tables? Yeah, look at Italy, right? I mean, look at Europe for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole month of August is shut down. You know why? Because they care about their life over rather than being worked to the bone. Guess what? Everything is about money.
and they get like 2-hour lunches to go home and make food, hang out with their family, you know, and they actually go home during lunch and cook a meal. And there, a lot of them, not everybody, of course, the young people probably don't, but you have the time to go home, cook a meal with your family, hang out. They even drink some wine. And then they go back to work, and everything's fine. They have a much more powerful workforce because everybody's happy. People want to go to work. Here, we have to go to work.
We have to, and we have to work multiple jobs at jobs that don't treat us well and aren't respected and aren't paid well.
Well, like you're seeing, this lady's working 3 jobs now, only in America. Only in America.
Let's give her a round of applause. That's a truly American. That's, you know, and she's getting up. She's like, I have to work 3 jobs to be able to put food on my table. And he like misses that point. And he's like,
she's like, excuse me, I'm not bragging.
I'm working 3 jobs because all of the jobs don't pay me enough to just work 1 job. America. Here's the point here, and I think this is the bottom line on this, is that there's been all of this garbage, you know, the sort of garbage stories about this over the years, and Republicans always love to point to this, which is there's this crisis of laziness, right? That's what these people are. They're lazy. Republicans seem determined to make workers so financially desperate that they'll labor for whatever pay employers deem to offer, or not, in the case of Laura Ingraham and Steak Boy. You know, just make them hungry. Make them hungry, and then they'll have to come back because they have nothing else they can do. But, you know, according to this piece and a number of economists have pumped out reams of studies on the question of whether larger unemployment benefits make people hesitant to work. The findings are nearly unanimous. They don't. One paper found that increasing unemployment checks in the pandemic didn't cause a drop in employment. In fact, people kept looking for jobs at the same rate as before. And employers didn't struggle to find employees any more than usual. We also have a recent test case during the recent Great Depression recession. Employment in states with more generous benefits looked about the same as in states with stingier ones. And when extra benefits abruptly expired last July, there was no sudden increase in the number of people working.
It's like, do you realize that it is possible for people to work and be happy? To work and want to go to work because they're paying their bills. They actually have a little bit left over at the end of the month that they can go out and, you know, go have their fun, go watch a football game or go to a restaurant with their kids and have a great weekend or something and just have that little nest egg of money that they can do that. But we keep people so close to poverty, so close to like losing that they could be like at any moment they could lose that job and then they're in a tailspin because they're going to be basically homeless. We don't care about that in this country. And it's like Dan Price is thinking, all those people got, like a lot of people bought houses. A lot of people have a better quality of life. They're happier. if you let people be happy and you gave them a job that they actually wanted to go to, this country would be completely changed.
Yeah,
but nobody thinks that way.
Imagine if the people that worked at Amazon were paid well, were treated well, were treated with respect, and maybe even had as the arguably one of the richest companies in the world, Amazon. What if they actually had a stake in the company? Imagine that. What if instead of the income inequality that at the top of that company making, what is it? I mean, probably 100, I would think 1,000 times greater salary than the person who's working at the warehouse at Amazon. Imagine if this was like closer together. You know, imagine if it wasn't such a huge disparity like it is in Europe, where the heads of companies are actually pretty close to, you know, maybe a little bit more, not a lot, not astronomical Jeff Bezos money.
And those people that you're talking about walk through the company, know the people. It's like they probably even eat with them. It's not like there's such a here. It's like us versus them. It's like you've got them so far removed from you that there's no way they could go eat with you because you're going to go eat fast food while they go eat their caviar and whatever in their yacht. Like they're not there. There's no connection whatsoever with the people that are making you that money. Whereas in Europe, the difference is this much where you're in the same, you know, almost the same class. So you can hang out and break bread together.
Yeah, it is not, you know, and the sort of flaunting of wealth is, I mean, it's just not done. I mean, you know, it really isn't. And you see, it's amazing to watch like the Bugatti factory, right? In Italy. I mean, that I keep coming back to that story.
You mean Ducati.
Ducati. And he, you know, he's like, we're a family here, you know, and we want our employees to all feel like a family. So they get the month vacation. I think they get like 3 months vacation or something. They can spread it out throughout the year. They just take it like 3 months off, like 90-day vacation.
Yeah, and that guy's walking through the factory like everybody's just like, hey, and it's like no big deal. He's out here. He walks out here and he is around us. It's not like you could you imagine Jeff Bezos walking the floor of Amazon and saying hi to people? He'd never do that.
No. And by the way, they're fired with an app, you know, in their phone. They're not even fired with a human. It's like you're done. You didn't qualify because we were tracking you and you tried to go to the bathroom too many times on a day that when maybe your stomach was upset or something. God knows, you know, but no, you're canned. You're fired. We'll stick somebody else in here. As a dog owner, I'm pretty sure a hungry dog is an aggressive, predatory dog. Maybe we should feed the people screaming, eat the rich, before they actually eat the rich. Let me know your thoughts on this story in the comments below. This guy.
Well, what if we just cut off the unemployment? I mean, hunger is a pretty powerful thing. I don't mean
physically. Yeah, sure you don't. Sure you don't. We got more news to get to today on the show. Oh, man. But I'll stop myself there. All right. Let's talk about the day the dollar died, shall we? It's hard to believe. I mean, let's give a happy birthday to the worst decision in American history, arguably. The moment 50 years ago when President Richard Nixon removed the U.S. dollar from the gold standard. Here's the president in his own words back at this time. Back on August 15th, 1971, here is Richard Nixon.
The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets, except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interest of the United States. Now, what does this action, which is very technical, what does it mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of what is called devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car, or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority of Americans who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today. The effect of this action, in other words, will be to stabilize the dollar.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You know what's funny? That was the day, and I know I get a lot of grief for this, and a lot of people hate Ron Paul, but that was the day that Ron Paul decided to give up a very successful medical practice and go to Washington and become a congressman because he did not agree with the removing the gold standard. Like, that's what motivated him to quit his practice and go to Washington.
Good for him. I mean, you know, watch my video, watch my interview with Ron Paul that I did here on the channel. And he, you know, he's been fighting that battle ever since. Good for him. Here's my friend Robert Kiyosaki, who said, "Happy birthday, fake U.S. dollar. 50 years ago today, August 15th, 1971, Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. U.S. dollar became fake money, ripping off workers, and savers become losers. 50 years ago today is why I do not save dollars. Smart people save gold, silver, and Bitcoin." Exactly. And if you look over my shoulder today, Bitcoin, $47,000 and going up, on its way up to $100,000. I mean, this is the future right here, folks. This is the future, because we can't trust our corrupt government. And I love the beginning of how condescending was Richard Nixon, right? He's like, "Now, this is a little complicated. Let me just dumb it down for you, you dumb people. You dumb people, don't pay attention to what's about to happen. Well, here's what's about to happen. Let's go through what actually happened. Let's look at the productivity gap." So here's a bunch of charts for you. So here's 1971 with the arrow, right? Here's the productivity and hourly compensation. Oh, productivity skyrocketed in the United States, right? All of these workers are working way harder. Three jobs. And the compensation? Look at this. Do you see the red line? There's the compensation. That's what happened. Here's the next chart. This is the real GDP, real wages and trade policies in the United States. Look at this, 1971. Look at that. Weekly earnings for full-time workers in red. Wow. Did wages keep up with the amount of GDP per capita? No, it did not. Here's another chart. How about the income growth from 1971? Ooh, look at this. The top 1% of earners in red. How well did they do suddenly? That's Richard Nixon. "I'm just going to tell you, you dumb people, you know, this is a little tricky. This is a little complicated. It's a little complicated.
The reserve assets, except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interest of the United States." Now, what is this action, which is very technical?
It's very technical. You guys are all very stupid. So let me just explain to you what it is.
"What does it mean for you?"
Oh, okay.
Let me read this piece of paper that somebody else wrote. Hold on.
Right, because I don't even understand it.
"Lay to rest the bugaboo."
It's just bugaboo that the U.S. dollar is going to lose value. It's just a lot of malarkey.
"Of what is called devaluation."
Devaluation. Well, no, it's not going to, our currency won't be devalued, as some of these people are saying. It's just not going to happen.
"If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less."
Oh, okay. Thank you for breaking that down for us. So income for the top 1% skyrockets. What happens to the bottom 90% of earners? In fact, goes down. Okay. 1971, you can see it right there. Here we go. Here's 1971. Our U.S. trade imbalance with the rest of the world. 1971 on the map, on the chart in red. What about this? The income share of the top 1% relative to the bottom 90% of Americans.
Well, and that gold standard, that's what made our dollar like a world. Everybody wanted the dollar. Like, it was like the dollar was like the currency.
Right. Yeah. Now we have that. We are the reserve currency of the world, backed by nothing. It's fake money. Which is why I always say, like, if you want to protect your family, you need to make sure your money is in commodities and Bitcoin and real estate.
There are businesses in Europe and Mexico and stuff like that that on the actual inside, it says we don't take the U.S. dollar anymore. Like, they don't take the dollar. Like, why would you?
Well, and why would you when you can actually have a decentralized currency that cannot be devalued? This bugaboo that I'm talking about. Yeah, this. This is the future. Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, which is not devalued, which cannot be devalued by a country. right? When you own Bitcoin and you see where this is going, it's up 63% since its dip earlier this year. I mean, what other asset? The US dollar can't provide this and the stability. I mean, you see these other countries right now. Look at El Salvador. Look at countries all through Latin America and Africa, which are now using this as a standard, are now beginning to use Bitcoin as a standard. Right? It's amazing that it's poor countries that are starting. It's starting there. How long until it cascades in the United States? How much further can we continue with this garbage? I mean, look at this. Here's another chart. Average black income as a percentage of average white income in the United States since 1971. Look at this. No progress. White income skyrocketing. How about this? United States personal savings rate since 1971. And those people that are saving, as Robert Kiyosaki talks about, are losers. And he doesn't mean you're a loser as in, you know, like a big L loser. What I always say, you know, savers are losers. It's the same thing. Savers become losers because the U.S. dollar continues to lose value. So when you put money into a bank, a U.S. dollar into a bank, it's losing money every month. It's you losing value every month. Every month. Electricity, food, and fruit. Look at this. A consumer price index since 1971. Look at this. It's like everything right from 1971. Right there. Boom. This one's shot. Look at this. The incarceration rate of inmates incarcerated under state and federal jurisdiction. Look at that, 1971. Look at that. It's like you can pinpoint everything back to 1971. It's so heartbreaking. How about this one? Divorce. I say like money is the leading cause of divorce, right? Look at that.
Well, that's because, you know, when people are in a situation that they're not happy, you're going to try to find things to what it is. Like, why am I not happy? And it's like, if people have good jobs and everything, they can focus on their life. They could focus on, you know, their kids and focus on other things. But right now, the way that it is, the only thing we can focus on is how to make money. I mean, we're so beholden to money because we have to have it, but our jobs don't pay anything. So it's like, everything's going to suffer.
Right, and we get a job that pays us in U.S. dollars, and that's losing value.
Right, and let's see the spike in that same time of mental health. Like, I bet mental health issues and anxiety and stuff increased at that time, too.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, insecurity, wealth insecurity, food insecurity. We're seeing it right now, the repeat of it right now, right? I mean, the thing is, it's continued since then, right? It's continued. And the wealth, the income gap has just grown larger, and the loss of the middle class. And look at this, you know, health, national health. Look how much we now spend on healthcare since 1971. Look at that. Look at the consumer price index, 1971. The cost of things. Shoom.
And look at this one. It's almost like somebody did this, that somebody at the Federal Reserve Bank or the Federal Reserve got together and they're like, how could we figure out a way that we can create fake money to give to us? Because if it's backed by the gold standard, there's only going to be so much that we can give to you guys, to you, 1%. We have to figure out a way we can create money out of thin air to pass it to you guys. I know. Let's just remove the gold standard because then we can print as much as we want, and you guys can have as much money as you need.
Someone just said, and I missed it here in the chat, but someone said, we probably got, here it is. Someone said, it's Urka says, we probably got a lot fatter in 1971 too, since then. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about now, you know, the federal government subsidizes all of these companies that make processed food and crappy agriculture and everything else. So since then, that's how it's all shifted as well. I mean, here's another chart. I mean, the consumer price index off the charts for the price of things, for all this crappy food that we pay for. But look at this. I couldn't almost fit this one on my screen because it was long ways. Look at the U.S. national debt since 1971. Unbelievable. So thank you, Richard. Thank you, President Nixon. And the answer, you know, I mean, I was trying to find a solution and everything. I mean, I think the answer in preserving wealth, if you, you know, look, you get paid in U.S. dollars from your company, transferring that to real estate, transferring that to commodities, transferring that to the gold standard, you know, away from this deflationary asset right now, away from this currency that can be debased by a government, putting it into Bitcoin, putting it into cryptocurrency, protecting your family, maybe even finding an employer that would agree to pay you in Bitcoin. Imagine that. So you could actually have an asset that's appreciating at a level that we've never seen before in American history. Or maybe, you know, maybe you could, and that, I think you're going to see a lot more businesses starting to do that. Like offering to pay you instead of in US fiat currency, like paying you in alternative currencies.
If you guys want to read a really good book that talks about this history and stuff, read The Creature from Jekyll Island. Any of you that like to read and want to know about the formation of the Federal Reserve and how this all started, how they created this private bank and these big families, these big money families, 13 of them came together and formed the Federal Reserve. It's very interesting, and you can see what they were trying to do and how it's playing out.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, you might as well just go back to 1913, right, when the foundation of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
You know, an unelected body that drives what we do in the United States, unelected.
Because I guarantee you that piece of paper that Nixon was reading came from them.
Of course. And what's amazing is that most, and I've done videos on this, but most Federal Reserve chairs, including Alan Greenspan, famously, they've all been pro-gold. They've all been pro-gold standard. But the real story, the real truth of it is that then when they become Fed chief, they can't talk about gold because it's anathema to the U.S. dollar, right? They can't. No, you can't talk about gold because that's like, oh my gosh, that would undermine U.S. currency, right? The U.S. dollar. But when they get out of when they get out of that job, like Alan Greenspan, I've done a video on this where he specifically then goes on and talks about, he's like, you know, I think, yeah, the U.S. dollar isn't backed by anything. I'm a huge fan of gold. And, you know, us taking it off the gold standard was a huge mistake. It's like, why didn't you tell us that when you were Fed chair? Why don't we push back to that standard? Because at least it's backed by an asset that we believe in. Now the U.S. dollar is backed by air. And what? The full faith and credit of the United States government? $28 trillion in debt? Like, what are we backed by?
And let's not forget it's backed by our labor, too.
Right. Yeah, so we can continue to pay them nothing. I mean, we'll look at these wages, you know, so these wages don't ever go up. You know, and, you know, the rich get richer, right?
I know. It's like every line, every single line that benefits the wealthy who have become wealthy since then, because that's all that was. That was another way to transfer our wealth to the corporations and rich, right? But look at our wages. So it's going to be like this. And then our wages maybe went up a little bit, but then it's been a straight line across for our wages this whole time, yet everything on their end goes up and up and up, and they're like, you know, dancing in gold and having parties, Scrooge McDuck, and celebrating.
Yeah. Well, that's even worse yeah, wages went straight across just for about everybody. Look at that red line, right? Just for about everybody. But it was even worse for Black Americans. I mean, you know, at least you had some slight movement for white Americans in income. Slow or no progress at all for Black Americans. So yeah, the U.S. dollar, you know, don't be worried about this bugaboo. Just a little technical thing you probably don't understand.
Bugaboo of what is called, what does it mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of what is called devaluation.
I think he's the only one I've ever heard use that word.
It's like something a grandpa would use, like. It's all bugaboo. Don't even worry about it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Drop me
a comment.
For me,
it sounds like
below.
Something you can't remember the name of. What was that little bugaboo thing that I found?
Bugaboo.
Dictionary, bugaboo, an object of fear or alarm, a bugbear, one of the favorite bugaboos, the ticking biological clock.
As someone says, Becky Medved says, he's so creepy. Yeah, he is. Yes, he is. I still say bugaboo. Maybe I'll start saying it now. Thanks, Tricky Dick. Thank you, Tricky Dick. All right, we've got one more story to get to today. And it is when Afghanistan falls, which is falling right now, unfortunately. So let me pull this up here. You know, it's no secret, obviously, what's been happening over the weekend is a nightmare. It's a nightmare for the people of Afghanistan, the failure of this government. The Taliban has now, you know, taken control of the palace. They're running the government. Look at all the people on the tarmac as people are trying to escape, get out of there. United States government saying, look, this is not Saigon. This is not like the fall of Vietnam. This is not different. Andrew Blinken, the Secretary of State, saying this on Sunday, saying, no, this is categorically totally different. So in what way is it different, by the way? In what way is it different? In Vietnam, we weren't there doing nation building. We were there just trying to keep the communists out of South Vietnam. But here we spent 20 years spending $2 trillion nation building. People are fleeing, trying to get away right now. In 10 days, let me just put this in context. In 10 days, that's all it took for this country to fall. 10 days after we left. And by the way, only 2,000 Americans, that's how many troops were left. We leave and the entire country falls.
Well, and what would it have been if we'd have never been there in the first place? Like if we had just went in and done what we were supposed to do and got out, this probably, we probably wouldn't be seeing this.
It was never a country to begin with. It was never, you know, it's multiple tribes held together by a boundary. It should never have been defined in the way that it was anyway. So we come there and we impose our will and define what this country will be in a country that does not want to come together. And we prop up this government. We prop up this faulty government. We tell them what, you know, how to run things. And they make a deal with the Taliban, basically. The people that we've handed weapons to, we've paid for their weapons using American forces, using our blood, sweat, and tears. We give them American weapons and munitions. And within a matter of days, they make an agreement with the Taliban to lay down their arms. They will not be punished as a result. 350,000 of them lay down their arms, no problem, and we'll just join up with you. U.S. weapons. We spent $2 trillion, 20 years, for what?
Well, and the thing is, it's like we're over there, like we just, like we're the epitome of democracy and just have everything perfect. We're a 200-year-old country, well, a little bit older than that now, but, and we're going over there to 1,000-year-old countries and trying to pretend like we're going to bring them what we have. Like, why would anybody else in the world want what we have? Starving people, homeless crisis, homeless, like everything that we have going on. Don't help during the pandemic. It's like, put it all on the people. Like, why would anybody in the world want what we have here? Yet we're like, we're the beacon of freedom. We're the beacon of democracy. And we're going to bring our democracy to your heathen lands. I mean, this is basically a holy war. It's Christians versus Muslims is what this really is.
And it's not over now. I mean, we thought it was over. Oh, fine, we're getting out of there. We knew we were going to continue drone strikes and continue to provide, quote, air support, which is just bombing indiscriminately, right? Now the State Department says we are going to expand our security presence. We're bringing back 6,000 troops. Okay, so we just left with 2,000, okay? We took 2,000 troops out of there. That was what was holding up the rest of the country and the Taliban government and the Afghan government. That was it. So now we're sending 6,000. To help with the evacuation of thousands of Afghans. Where are they going to go? And no one thought this through over 20 years. The problem is that they have thought this through over 20 years, and they knew exactly what they were doing over the past 20 years. This was all for the enrichment of billionaires through the military-industrial complex. There never was a plan. It was an endless war on purpose. And by the way, that's why our military presence exists around the world. It's an endless, endless perpetuation of funneling billions of dollars to trillionaire corporations around the world in defense contractors. I mean, Dean Thomas says 2,500 lives lost, 20,000 soldiers now disabled and destroyed for what? And I would even say it's even higher than that. It's even higher than that. I mean, talk about the suicide rate, the mental illness as a result of this. It's been an absolute disaster.
And we're only talking about our soldiers. We're not even talking about their innocent people that we've killed. The innocent people that have been like just basically thrusted into the middle of our agenda at no fault of their own. Like, how many of them have died?
And you have the 9/11 families that are calling, saying, we don't want President Biden to show up at the 9/11 ceremonies until he fully declassifies the information about Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11.
That'll never happen. You imagine the can of worms that would open?
Right. Oh, you mean they were the country responsible? Like, we can't admit that. Do you think these guys are going to admit that? I thought this it was an interesting interview. I want to play it here. This was on Tucker the other night. Former Navy SEAL, Eric Prince. Of course, if you watch the mainstream media, it's a full pressure, full court attack right now, right? On the mainstream media. Everywhere you turn.
I thought he was the founder of Blackwater.
Yeah, he's a Navy SEAL, and I don't know if is he the founder of Blackwater? I don't know if he's the founder of it.
Let me look. While you play that, I'll look it up, because I thought he...
I mean, he's with Blackwater. I don't know if he's the founder of it. But he certainly was a Navy SEAL, and he certainly was there. But I'm going to play this, because I'm not going to editorialize here on it. I'm going to play it.
Says Eric Dean Prince is an American businessman, former Navy SEAL, and a founder of the private military company Blackwater.
Okay. Who, by the way, they make their money off of this, right? That's how they make their money, is war. If there's no war, does Blackwater make money?
Well, and that's what, when we're saying that, you know, the troops are going to be pulled out and the military is going to leave, when we say that shadow ops are going to stay, it's companies like Blackwater that we're talking about.
Who make, trillions of dollars. Well, not trillions, mercenaries. Billions of dollars. Mercenaries. Right, that was the huge bugaboo during the Iraq war, right? Who are these people that are carrying out these missions? They're just black. They're contractors. So it's we don't have the oversight that we have on these guys. Okay. So here he is. I want to play this. I don't want to editorialize on it. I'll editorialize on the backside of this.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm a heavy equipment operator, if I tip over my crane on a construction site and kill people, I don't get a promotion in a bigger crane. I mean, why is it that Torian Newland, who's like a moron and has a hand in every bad decision this country has made in the past 20 years, is like, has power again? Like, how can this happen?
So specifically, he's asking the question that why are the same people, you know, that, and he says, Trump, Obama, Biden, doesn't matter who's president. They come and they go. It's the people that run the military industrial complex in Washington. Like, they continue to make these awful decisions and they stay there. They stay there and they keep. And what he's asking, and he knows he's asking this question, and he won't press him on this point because he knows that a person who stands to benefit from him is being interviewed right now. It's this guy, Eric, right? He stands to benefit from it. So he doesn't want to crap talk these people necessarily. He wants to go on TV and kind of crap talk them. And then he'll make money on the backside.
We've gone through 18 generals in charge of Afghanistan. None of them resigned in disgust because they were restrained from not fighting or from carrying out the operations the way they wanted. So they have no excuse. None of them resigned. One was fired for embarrassing Obama, but none of them have been fired for failing to deliver victory. The taxpayers have done their part. Lord knows we've spent a lot of money. The rank and file soldier have done their part. They have fought well. But when you have failed leadership with and allowed lawyers to become what Zompolits were, the political officers in the Soviet Union, fighting with half measures, it makes it all a waste. And so I am truly sad for the veterans that see this go. We have lost 60,000 veterans to suicide in the global war on terror. That's more than we lost in Vietnam from despair, from seeing it done poorly. Why do I sacrifice myself? Why do I hang it out there with my buddies every day to see it pissed away by half-baked politicians in Washington?
Okay. So what is victory then? You know, this is the question I've asked for years on the air. What is victory then to you? You know, it's very easy for you to get up there and why were we there in the first place? That should be the real question. Why were they there in the first place?
Well, they in the first place, it was supposed to go get Osama bin Laden. But instead, when he wasn't there in Afghanistan, we're like, well, then we went to destroy Iraq. We went to Afghanistan to get bin Laden. He wasn't there, so we stayed there and then also went into Iraq.
Right, and Donald Rumsfeld famously said, well, we can't go into Iraq, right? Well, I mean, we can't go into Afghanistan. There's no good buildings. There's no good television to bomb, right? So we need the CNN airstrike videos, right? We need the bombs, buildings going up. That's how the American people will respond to 9/11. There's no buildings in Afghanistan. It's all like sheep herders and mountains. That was Donald Rumsfeld under George W. Bush. You know, and we decided, well, let's do both then. Let's give a little, let's tie them together somehow. So then we go into a country and, you know, at the beginning of this interview, he says, we won the mission at the beginning, which did we? Because we didn't catch Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. Like, what did we do actually? Eric says, we won early on and we squandered it. Okay, so then why under George W. Bush didn't we leave if we won in Afghanistan? Okay, then we won, but we didn't. What was the win? What exactly did we win?
Well, and when we do go in to any of these conflicts and win, why do we stay? Where everywhere we go, we stay. So what is the win?
And it's not even a conflict. It's like it's a war of it's imperialism. And that's exactly what it is. Like, what are we doing there?
Empire building.
We empire build, but we don't actually take the land and turn it into like another American state. You know, we go there and we try to prop up our own governments that don't work using our own standards, using our own way of doing things, and it falls apart. So you're trying to stick together all of these tribes that don't want to be stuck together with one another, trying to create a government that shouldn't be together at all. In a region that has thousands of years of history, and we think we're going to march in there and win the hearts and minds, right? That was the state. We're going to win the hearts and minds of these people and rid terrorism. So in 10 days, we leave. The Taliban move in. The government was never going to stand on its own in the first place. We knew this. And by the way, under Trump, we totally made them toothless when we started negotiating with the Taliban and didn't let the government of Afghanistan negotiate with the Taliban. We did the negotiating. I mean, then look at this little piddly government over here. So we just went around them, totally undercut them. No wonder the president skipped town and left Afghanistan and the entire government crumbled in 10 days.
And here we are over here. Russia stole our elections. And look at what we do. We're circumventing their whole process.
I mean, just let this be a lesson to you guys. I mean, you're seeing this now all over mainstream media. All over the big billionaire media corporations are telling us what a disaster this is, why we need to go back there and help these people, because they make their money off of this. They make their money off of war. They want us back there. They want us to continue this incredibly senseless war for years to come. Like, so 20 years wasn't good enough? What, 40 years? Should we stay for 40 years? Should we stay for 60 years?
I mean, we're almost there. You know, we've almost got a perfect democracy there. We've almost got like it's almost where it needs to be. I think like 10 more years, we could probably figure it out. But it's like, you know, I'm not a Christian or anything, but I did study the Bible when I was going to be a preacher. And there's a verse in there about taking the log out of your own eye before you take the splinter out of somebody else's. We have the biggest log in our own eye over here in our own country. Yet we don't care about that. We think that we're going to spread democracy all over the world and bring peace and democracy with guns, mind you. If you want peace and democracy, of course you do it with guns and bombs, right? That's the only way you can do it. And yet, look at us here. Like if this is the beacon of freedom, the beacon of what everybody should be in the world, this would be a. Could you imagine if we made every country like the United States? This world would suck.
Yeah. I'd much rather have maybe, why didn't the Vikings take everybody over? You know, like maybe I'm like Norwegian, like everyone would have healthcare and you know, 90 days of vacation and a government that cares about you. Instead, you know, yeah, we're the ones going around the world. We can't even fix our own internet in the United States. We can't even fix our own schools in the United States. And yet we want to go around the world and tell people how to do things. Come on, man. I mean,
nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Janine. But you know, they'll say, why did we leave? Donald Trump sends out a message via Twitter from one of his cronies the other day saying, miss me yet? You know, this disaster wouldn't have happened under me. And yet you were the one that started negotiating with the Taliban, sidestepping the Kabul government. So what would have happened? We would have stayed there indefinitely, even though you said you wanted to get out of there. How differently would you have done it, Master Trump? How differently would have anybody done it? None of them would have done it any differently because the generals and the military-industrial complex were running the show. And that's how they would continue to make money. They want us back there.
And if you can't run your own country, if we can't run our own country, like, how arrogant are we that we think we can run everyone else? Like, people are starting to see, like what that documentary, I love seeing, like, people in Italy's faces when Michael Moore revealed to them that, like, we don't get vacations over here. We don't get maternity leave over here. We don't get these things. We don't have health care in this country. And they're just like, wow, I wanted to go to America just for those things. And it's like, no, those things don't exist. The American dream is a joke. But you know what? We're going to go around the world and we're going to try to make everybody like us.
Yeah. It's like, do as I say, but not as I do, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Nathaniel says, yes, all these networks, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, keep pushing the BS narrative. We need to stay there. Yeah. I mean, I'm just curious right now, how many of you have picked up a newspaper, read a news article online, have turned on your mainstream media run by billionaires, and you've seen them all pushing the same narrative? They have generals on the air. They've had Navy SEALs on the air. They've had, also quote unquote experts at terrorism who have said this is a disaster. We need to stay in Afghanistan. We need to go back there. We need to put more troops there. It's been narrative across all of the mainstream media.
That is something we can train. We can definitely teach people how to be terrorists because we're good at that.
Yeah. I mean, think about
this.
It's
no wonder we've worked with the Taliban and everything.
We created the Taliban. I mean, come on. Like, you know, this is what I don't understand. It's like we literally have created these terrorist organizations. Let's say it. Let's be honest. We've created them. They're armed with the very weapons that we gave them. These 350,000 people who we trained for 20 years, they just laid down their weapons, all our American weapons that you paid for, by the way. That should be the most infuriating thing, right? Is that Americans paid taxpayer dollars to arm these Afghan soldiers. And then in literally no time at all, they laid down all of these munitions, tanks, weapons, the entire U.S. military basically handing over millions of weapons to the Taliban that we paid for. You paid for it.
Well, and you know, and I remember watching videos of like ISIS rallies and all this stuff, or marches or whatever. And I was always like, how in the hell do every one of those guys underneath those white gowns have our military boots on? They were wearing our military boots. So where did they get those? And how did they happen to get their sizes and everything? Like, it's got to be this, like, and nobody's talking about that. Nobody sees that stuff, but it's like every single one of them had those boots on. So those had to come from us somehow. So how many of these organizations are we actually funding? I would argue all of them.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that.
Because like I always say about what Wesley Clark said, when you're a hammer, every problem has to be a nail. So if we get these different factions fighting each other, it gives us an excuse because at any time we can be, well, this faction is doing this, so now we've got to invade. Or the other one, like if we pit both sides against the other, we've always got an excuse. Oh, now this side is moving in on this faction. And I know we helped this faction in the past, but, you know, we got them under control. Now it's this faction we got to worry about.
You know, it's amazing to me. I watched this video of the Taliban leaders taking over the Kabul palace, right? I'm sure many of you have seen this video now. But this image just stood out to me more than anything, because it's like, here they are sitting at the presidential palace now, at the desk of the president of Kabul, right? Here's the Taliban. They put their weapons down on the table, their guns, they're all like dirty and literally covered in dust and dirt. And they've been marching or do whatever they're doing. They're sitting there. And it's like, I couldn't help but think when I saw this, like the guy sitting there, he's like, oh crap. You know, now I got to actually govern a country. Oh crap. Now I actually, now I got to do the hard part. You know, it's fine for 20 years to be the ones that are hiding out, just shooting American soldiers and blowing up stuff. Now I actually have to run a government. I've been wanting this for 20 years. Let's see if I can do it now. And he's like, oh my God, what have I done? It's much easier to be, to not do this.
But the thing is, like, we're in their country. Can you blame us? Blame them for wanting to kill us? Like, can you blame them for wanting, like, if we invade these countries and then we blame them when they attack us and don't want us there? Like, what sense does that make? Like, who knows? These battles between these people have been going on for thousands of years. Just let them figure it out on their own. At some point, they'll figure it out like we did. You know, when we came together, we had slaves, and we got past it. It takes people standing up and people creating movements in these countries over time could get past this stuff. But what business is it of ours if they don't?
And that's the thing. You know? It never works. It never works when we try to stick our nose into it. It never works.
And to think that it ever would, because think about this. I played that video that we made during the Ron Paul campaign where it's like, imagine if China came here. If China came to this country and they set up a base in Texas, and then because let's use the pandemic as an example. We've got the pandemic. The American people aren't getting any help. People are facing homelessness. 20 million people facing homelessness that could be put on the street at any moment. And China's like, you know what? The U.S. government is doing this to the people. This is not right. We're going to go over there. We're going to make a base in Texas, and we're going to bring freedom to those people, and we're going to get you guys help. And then they come out and then they end up killing some people because they bombed Washington, and a bunch of innocent people end up getting killed and all this, like children, people and all that. And we're going to be like, no, it's okay. It's okay. It's a sacrifice. We lost those people, but they were trying to help us, you know, by bringing freedom and bringing money and food to us. So we had to lose all those American lives.
Yeah. Imagine if I would take it even one step further, you know, imagine like Canada, which actually has healthcare for its people, actually didn't abandon its people during the pandemic, has a good quality of life and a standard of living, right? Takes care of its people and a social safety net that really provides for people. And imagine they say, you know, what we see the United States is like, man, this is like we see all these killings that are happening on a regular basis. There's all these shootings. There's like, we're seeing these uprisings that are happening. You know what? We're going to invade. Canada is going to invade the United States. So Canada invades and does
with
exactly
the Royal
that.
Canadian Mounted Army.
Yeah, a bunch of horseback mounted army mounties come across the border and they start setting up shop. They start setting up bases and they're like, you know what? We're going to help these people because their government just is not taking care of them. How quickly do you think that the American government would shut that down? Oh, suddenly there's tanks rolling across the border. Sorry, well, but we're Canada, here to help.
And Canada would be labeled a terrorist. Which is exactly what we're doing. We terrorize these other countries under the auspice of spreading peace and democracy, which is a lie. Because have we ever walked away and had complete stabilization and peace from any of these places?
No. No.
You know, and the thing is, too, like a lot of people don't realize, like Iran right now, we want to go to war with Iran so bad, but what do? We put sanctions on them. And so we're still killing kids. We're still killing people because they can't get insulin. They can't get drugs that they need. Make no mistake that sanctions are an act of war in themselves. So we put sanctions on them, make them suffer. That's in itself is, in my opinion, a form of terrorism because we're terrorizing these people for no reason whatsoever. Just so that we can make them unstable so that we can find an excuse to go in and spread democracy.
I mean, it's so sick to just watch social media and to see all these people like, Biden's a total failure and you know, we should absolutely go back in there and we should have never done this. And it's just amazing to watch the mainstream media do this and social media. People just really do not have a sense of history, do not understand what's going on here.
Well, and somebody brought up a good point. Could you imagine, like, let's say that Russia and China get together and they're like, you know what, these guys are out of control. We're going over there. If we were ever to get attacked on our own soil, all of our military spread so thin across the world, I don't even know that we could defend ourselves. We can't even defend the state capital from some Trump supporters.
Right. I mean, what's so sad too, I mean, you see these people chasing after the U.S. Air Force. Either they're happy or they're terrified. They want them on board. They're like clinging to the side of U.S. cargo ship. Like, please take us with you. Like, let us out of here. Just horrifying. People just trying to get to the airport. Get out. And you have people cheering. You know, they're like, yes, they're leaving. Like, yes, look. Yay, bye, they're leaving, hallelujah, thank you, get out of here. So for someone to say this is not like a Saigon moment, I mean, I don't know what other comparison would be more appropriate? I don't know. Let me know. Let me know in the chat if you can think of a more appropriate one. Peace, everyone. Have a great day.